Yeah, so before we get into the study part of things, let's say a couple of prayers to get us started. If you look in the white prayer book, we'll start on the first base sheet on the front where it says Shakyamuni Buddha's mantra. We'll do that three times and then follow it with the four measurables in English and in Tibetan. Taya ta mune mune maha munaye soha. Taya ta mune mune maha munaye soha. Taya ta mune mune maha munaye soha. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. Sentientam che devadang te. On the bottom of the pink sheet, we'll say those two mantras at the very bottom. We'll start with Chen Reizig's mantra, and we'll do that eight times. Om Mani Padme Hum. 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 Om Tari Tu Tari Tu Re Soha. 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 Great. Wonderful. So welcome, everyone. I think there are a few folks here for the first time, is that right? Yeah, so welcome. If you have any questions, this is real informal, so just feel free. In fact, we'll have some sections where we'll even be passing the mic and talking if anybody can get that going so early this morning. So, So I always like to begin by just taking a minute to rejoice about how amazing it is that we're all able to actually come and be here together for this. So many causes and conditions had to come together for us to be here today. First, you know, of course there had to be some teachings, but in just looking at the lifeline for Kadampa Center, Don Brown happened to go to India and found something interesting there and brought it back here and then asked Lama Zopa Rinpoche if he could start the center, and it started and more people started coming, and then they brought Geshe Gelug at the suggestion of Lama Zopa Rinpoche, and so then we have our resident teacher who's been here with us now for 15 years, and then we moved into this building, and there are all the people who volunteer in the many, many ways that keep things going and offer their time and their money and their service, and so we have electricity and we have the center, and then everyone decided this morning that maybe they'd want to come to this and got dressed and got here, and I mean just so many things that have led to this moment for us to be here right now, and so let's just rejoice about the amazingness of that. It's rare and precious. Okay, so often Geshe-la begins with some meditations. So I thought we might do a couple of those. The first one that he often does is called nine-round breathing, and I know most of you know this one, but we'll do a quick review of what that one is. So the reason for doing this meditation is to help eliminate any of that wasteful energy, the energy that kind of gets stuck and keeps us from having the energy flow. And so there's three sets of three that are part of this meditation. And it starts by using your ring finger on your left hand, and you place it against your left nostril, and then you inhale through your right nostril. And you do that slow and steady, and then you switch sides, keeping the same finger, but switch nostrils, and exhale. And we do that three times. That's the first round, or the first three rounds of the nine-round breathing. Then we'll just switch hands and switch nostrils. Inhale through the left, exhale through the right. And do that three times. Then we inhale through both and exhale through both three times. And that makes the nine rounds. So if you're new, just follow along. Does that make sense? Kind of to get you started? Okay. So you can just, if you kind of get confused, you can just sort of see what everyone's doing. The key thing for meditation in terms of, there's a 7-point posture, but the most important thing is what your back's doing. So you just want your back to be straight. Sometimes they talk about like a stack of coins, or sometimes they say imagine a balloon attached to your head that's kind of lifting you straight up. The idea is just that if your back is straight, then that energy can move more freely through your body. So let's just take a moment to calm our minds. And then start with that left hand and close that left nostril and inhale through the right. And then switch hands. And then through both nostrils. Okay, fantastic. So we'll do one more meditation here, and this one is a breathing meditation. And one of the reasons that we use breathing meditation is because our breath is always with us. That's an easy thing to bring along. And so it's a very portable meditation you can do anywhere. Sometimes if it's a long line at the grocery store and the person's having trouble getting out their coupons or the price isn't on the item or whatever it is, I'll do it while I'm waiting in line. I'll just sort of be focused on my breath to try to help me not make it worse and feel impatient or worse than that, act on that feeling of impatience. So this is a very simple one, but it can be very profound. The idea of this one, there's a couple reasons for doing a meditation like this. One is that it's very hard to do any kind of deep meditation if our mind is negative or already disturbed. And so this breathing meditation can help set us back to neutral. So if we're angry, frustrated, jealous, you know, any kind of negative feeling, and we can do this meditation, it can often get us to a neutral state. And then it makes it easier to do something to become positive. So another reason for doing this is to just help us with our concentration. So the way this one works is that it's the opposite from the 9-round breathing in terms of how you start. On the 9-round breathing, you start with the inhale. On this other breathing meditation, you start with the exhale. You exhale, you inhale, and then you count one. Then you exhale, inhale, count two. And you just keep counting until you've lost your place. Maybe you're thinking about the groceries or the tasks you're going to be doing later on today or somebody who was mad at you yesterday, and you go, wait, is it six or seven? Well, then you just go back to one. It's, you know, not anything you're doing wrong, no big, oh, I'm going back to one, right? You just go back to one, being kind with yourself. One time I heard somebody say, you know, it's like correcting a puppy. You're gentle, just come on back. So you just do that, and we'll just do this for literally maybe 2 or 3 minutes and just see how far you can get. And if you're counting okay, then just keep going. And if not, just start back at one. And really, if you're having trouble and you're having to start back at one over and over and over again, that's kind of a positive because you're working that muscle. It's sort of like doing reps of the weights or whatever. You know, the more times you're having to bring your mind back, then you're building up that strength to be able to keep going. So the fact that we're even just looking at this is really wonderful. So again, just have your back straight if you can. If you're in a chair, feet flat on the floor. And just let's concentrate on our breath for a couple minutes, and then I didn't bring the bell over here, so I'll just say something that'll let us know that we're coming back into the space in the room here. Okay. Bring your attention back to the room. So that was 2.5 minutes. And that's worthy of rejoicing. Does anybody have any questions? Okay, great. So this summer, Geshe-la's been talking some about this idea of great compassion. And I thought that I'd focus a little bit on that today. And one of the things that, I'll ask this a different way. I'll give you a little bit of a hint. So does anybody know what the definition of compassion is from a Buddhist point of view? It has to do with one of the prayers we just did. Gold star for Chris, yeah. So so in that prayer we did at the beginning, the four immeasurables, we talk about may all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness, which is the definition of love in a Buddhist, from a Buddhist point of view. And then may they be free from suffering and the causes of suffering is the definition of compassion. And often those go hand in hand, and sometimes it's even hard to tell whether you're wishing them to be happy or wishing them not to be suffering. But so that's kind of what we're talking about when we're talking about compassion. And I have a quote here from His Holiness the Dalai Lama. Whether one believes in a religion or not, and whether one believes in rebirth or not, there isn't anyone who doesn't appreciate kindness and compassion. And that was kind of, I think, one of the themes that Geshe-la was bringing out this summer, too, that it's not about religion, it's about, you know, how we act with others. And so I was going to take just a minute and give a little history of the 16 guidelines. Often, when Geshe-la isn't teaching, those of us who are leading are asked to use the 16 guidelines as a basis for that. And the 16 guidelines is what we teach in our children's program. And the 16 guidelines are 16 ideas to cultivate that are secular, right? Honesty, kindness. But wisdom and compassion run through all 16. They're sort of at the foundation of these 16. And Lama Zopa Rinpoche, who's the spiritual director of Kadampa Center, among many other centers, when he was here in May, he asked specifically if we were using the 16 guidelines in anything. And so we were able to say, yeah, we use it in our children's program. But it's something that I know he has promoted quite a bit over the course of his time with FPMT. So the real aim of the 16 guidelines is to be something practical and accessible and easy to approach to help people develop their natural capacity to be kind and wise. And it's kind of about positive societal change that starts with the individual. That's one of the ways that 16 guidelines talks about itself. So they note that, you know, because we're all dependent on each other, that it's really a wise form of self-interest to have compassion, and that because we all have the potential to change and grow, even neuroscience is showing us that, right, more than we used to think, that we all can make these changes, that this is a great message of hope, you know, and that we can, by focusing on these things, we can really change the way we move through the world. So we're going to take just a little journey today exploring that and see if there's anything that fits for us. So I've just lost my sound guy. we're gonna watch a couple videos today. And Chris and I were joking yesterday about how he was going to help us do this. But so I'll set this up while you're doing that. So I've got a few videos from His Holiness the Dalai Lama to help us today, and they're all short. I think the longest one's 3.5 minutes or something. But this first clip is called Finding Purpose in Life, and I'm trying to decide. I don't want to say too much because I want to sort of reveal itself, but this one is only about 3.5 minutes, and It's based on compassion. Okay. Yeah. Can you all see okay?
Affection or compassionate attitude, warm-heartedness, is very, very important for one's own well-being, one's own happiness. So don't consider practice of compassion is something religious matter, or practice of compassion is something good for other, not necessarily to oneself. That's a totally mistake. So, since from childhood we already equipped this seed of compassion, we learned from mother and ourselves in order to become parent, the seed already there. Now that seed we must keep nurture whole our life. The biological factor of compassion is limited, biased, and more depend on others' attitude. Now that as a seed, then using reasons, awareness, that seed compassion can develop, can further develop unbiased compassion. Not based on, not depend on others' attitude, but rather others' being itself. So that kind of compassion can reach your enemy or entire sentient being. So that compassion is infinite compassion, unbiased compassion, real compassion. So if we become compassionate person, then your life becomes meaningful, because you yourself happy, calm, peaceful, your friend or including animals also you see get peace. So at the last day of our life you feel happy. Now whole my life I'll spend peaceful, friendly, and you really feel happy. Otherwise, at that moment, even you are a billionaire, those money, nothing can be used. No matter what's good, because of the good body, or beautiful body, or everything have to leave. So at that time, I think genuine satisfaction can bring, if your whole life spent more compassionate life, then you feel, oh, no regret. So, purpose of life is naturally happy life, meaningful life. So in order to make meaningful life, ultimately, warm-heartedness is the key factor.
Okay, so His Holiness says that compassion is the key, right, to a happy, meaningful life. So, do you think that's true? Is there something to that? Yeah.
I think that's true. For me personally, it's very hard to be sometimes self-compassionate or compassionate to people who I think have done wrong to me. If, for example, there are some people in my life I think they have done wrong to me, and I think if I'm compassionate to them, then I'm approving of their wrong behavior, which might be wrong. I realize sitting here. And I don't know how to solve that problem, like how to be compassionate to somebody who has done wrong to me.
Sure. So that question of having compassion even for people who we don't like or who actually we feel like hurt us or our enemies, to use the words of His Holiness, right? That's the hard bit, right? It's not so hard to be compassionate to the people who we love and are kind to us, right?
Yes, and I realize that, like, when I forget somebody, it's myself I'm freeing of the pain. So it's just, for some people, it's really hard, and I was wondering if you have a solution for that.
Yeah, so you've already experienced how it can help you feel better to forgive someone. You know, it's not about them, it's about you, right? So you forgive them and you feel better, right? And they talk about, when we talk about anger, you know, that it's like swallowing poison yourself, hoping you're hurting someone else, right? So there is something that's in the logic about how if we can be compassionate, it helps us. But sometimes it's very hard to be logical when it feels emotional, right? And that's part of the work of just trying things on and trying them over and over again, you know, and trying a little step and then just checking in and seeing, did that help? Did I feel better? You know, what if I just pretend for today that I've forgiven someone? What's that feel like for me if I can't quite let go of it? You know, just trying it a little bit at a time, you know, to see. What do other people think? I'm sure everyone in the room has some experience of forgiving or not, or having compassion or not. Yeah, Barbara.
Practice that has helped me is the loving kindness meditation, where you go stranger, friend, loved one, enemy, and self, and meditate on each one of those. And from practicing that some, I've discovered my worst enemy is me.
Mm.
And that when I feel someone has wronged me or hurt me, a lot of times I'm complicit in that hurt, that I've participated in some way, and that it's made it much easier when I'm angry or upset with someone to kind of examine how I've participated and be able to be compassionate to that person. Nobody has seriously wronged me. It's all the day-to-day petty contrivances, you know, things that maybe irritate you.
Yeah, so for you, part of your process is to look at what your role has been in it, and that often you find out, oh, I did have some, it wasn't just a one-way street.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, so that can be helpful to figure that out.
Yeah,
to figure out where we see that. And, of course, to recognize that no matter what's coming from the outside, the only thing we have power over changing is what's going on inside.
Yeah, and how you react.
Yeah. Now, that doesn't mean if someone's hitting you, you just stand there and go, well, I can't change that. You know, I'm not trying to say that. But that, you know, when it comes to our experience, it's completely formed from our side out. Right? Yeah. Yeah. Anybody else? Yeah, Louise.
I think for me sometimes, not sometimes, but it helps in all the things that I've read, that really looking at that person and seeing that they really want to be happy, they're just not skillful and I'm not skillful, so we're all in this boat together, and sometimes we meet up and it works okay, and other times it's like, oh wow. And sometimes I see my reflection of myself in their behavior too. It's like, yeah, I've been there, you know. So it really kind of helps me to just kind of chill a little and not get so wound up in things.
Yeah. So we all want happiness, and most all of us are not so skillful every moment of trying to achieve our own happiness, and that means it can sort of spread all over everybody else sometimes, right? And so you recognize that when you're the recipient, because you know sometimes you're the actor, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great one, too. Yeah. Okay. Well, thanks. So another quote from His Holiness says that love and compassion are necessities, not luxuries. Without them, humanity cannot survive. So to me, that quote's taking it even one step beyond what we've just been talking about, right? It's sort of looking at not just how do I feel, whether I'm compassionate or not, But what does that mean in terms of our whole humanity? Right? That's kind of a big one. Does that feel any different when you look at it from that point of view, or is it kind of just all the same, only bigger? Just wondering if that feels any different.
It helps me to see it from a different point of view, that it's just not about me. I have to look at it. It makes the world a better place, and I want to be part of that. And for our children, and like for generations to be happier and healthier, it's a necessity now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a great way of looking at it. So it's not even just affecting the people that are here in the world today, but an even further look about generations to come.
Yes, because the only way to make a good world right now is to be kind and compassionate.
Yeah.
And that's the world that the people who are going to come and future will live in.
Yeah. Okay, fantastic. So so continuing on this theme then, and particularly looking at what great compassion means, Geshe has talked about that some this summer, and that I think is exactly what the topic of the next one is. This is the unbiased compassion one, Chris, if you could play that one.
Now, compassion. As I mentioned yesterday, I think yesterday, the compassion or sense of concern of well-being towards one's own friend, those people who really show to you positive, that sense of concern is, as I mentioned there, biased. Actually, very much involve attachment. So as soon as attachment develops, that's unrealistic attitude, biased. And the biased, limited attachment often bring hatred. Clear? A compassion which we want to promote, it is unbiased compassion. That compassion, once we train, not only towards one's own close people, but also enemy. Because the biased affection or compassion mainly oriented other sort of action towards me, good, positive, friendly, so I love them. These people harm to me, negative action towards me, so instead of affection, feel anger. The other unbiased compassion not oriented their action or their attitude, but simply they are also sentient being or human being. They also want happiness. They also have every right to overcome suffering. So on the basis of that kind of awareness, then develop genuine sense of concern. That's unbiased, right?
No.
Unbiased compassion. Genuine compassion. Here, no attachment.
So that's kicking it up another notch, right? And so it's part of what Louise was talking about, right? Just recognizing we're all in this together and we all want happiness and don't want to suffer, right? And sometimes that can be the basis for allowing us to forgive, right? If we just can really, at a deep level, understand that. And that can be really hard. Right. So just to recap, so what was the difference between biased and unbiased compassion in the way that His Holiness just talked about it? Okay. And so what does that mean? What does it mean to have a biased compassion with attachment? What's an example of that? Either a real personal one for you or just to sort of throw out an example. Yeah.
For an example, it's when you're giving something to somebody, you're giving it to them because you want to.
not because you're expecting something in return. So when you're giving something, and I think Ben Rovino talked about it, and I thought that just lit up a light bulb for me. You give someone something to somebody, you give it to them because you want to, not because you're expecting them to say thank you. And that was just a short example that means a lot for your way of life. And for you to be upset because that person never called you back or wrote you a thank you card, that's not what the purpose of what you gave them that for. It's because you wanted to give them something without that attachment.
Okay.
And it's hard to let go of that part because you're conditioned to that acknowledgement that you actually did something good.
Yeah.
And when you do something, you do it because you don't want, you're not expecting somebody to say, that was a great job, Monica, that was great.
Yeah. So if strings are attached, that's a clue right there that we're not unbiased, right? That we are biased. Yeah, that's a very clear example. Yeah, great. Okay. And so the very first time I saw this clip, I've seen it many times now, but the first time I was really struck by this idea that actually that form of compassion, the biased compassion, can bring hatred, right? That's so counterintuitive on the one hand, right? Because we think that it's the compassion that's going to make the world a better place, right? So if it's biased compassion, it can actually lead to hatred, right? That was, to me, very counterintuitive. Did anybody have thoughts like that? Or was it real clear? Maybe it was just me.
I just maybe think that if your compassion is biased, you wouldn't likely give compassion to an enemy. You know what I mean? So that would make it hatred.
Mm-hmm.
That would flip it
mm-hmm.
on its other end.
Yeah. Yeah. And what came to mind for me was, you know, a lot of people have covered the song, It's a Thin Line Between Love and Hate, right? Annie Lennox, The Pretenders, there's a lot of people who have talked about that, right? But, I mean, in some ways, it's just not that different between a biased compassion that can quickly be flipped into something negative, right? Does that fit?
To me, I relate to what you were saying, Monica, that if you are giving with bias, you're expecting something back, and if you don't get what you expect, that can turn into anger.
Yeah,
exactly.
So I can think of a lot of examples of that.
Yeah.
Didn't get a thank you note, that kind of thing.
Right, right. And so one of the challenges, I think, is if we buy into this, if this seems to make sense, then it's a challenge to start teasing out, where am I doing that, right? Like just to notice our actions and see, when am I doing that? And just know, again, out of self-interest, when might I want to get better at pulling back on that and not doing that? And that doesn't mean the first time we try we're successful or that every time we think about it we've made a grand change. But getting back to that earlier point of we really are, you know, plastic minds, you know, there is plasticity there, we can change, that really we can make a difference if we keep looking at these things, if we want to. So then what's the basis for that unbiased compassion? His Holiness did say it, but like I said, I've seen this a few more times. I don't know if anybody caught it. No. So that genuine, he says, developing the genuine sense of concern because they're human beings. Everyone is a human being who wants happiness and doesn't want to suffer, right? So if we can keep coming back to that as a base, if that makes sense and we buy into that, then that can be the touchstone we return to when we're struggling. Yeah. And there was another quote from His Holiness on his website that I really liked about this topic. He said, true compassion is not just an emotional response, but a firm commitment founded on reason. Therefore, a truly compassionate attitude towards others does not change even if they behave negatively, right? Because it's not about their behavior, it's about who they are, right? So that's a lovely place to get to, maybe not so easy every day. Yeah, Louise.
I try. My mother always accused me of jumping in with not really thinking about things quickly, or, you know, thinking about things, just jumping in quickly. And I was doing that loving kindness meditation, and I thought, okay, I'm going to try this with ISIS.
Yeah.
And, ooh, that hurt. That was hard. So it's so hard. It's hard to do, particularly when you see a group or a person. You know, I guess you're not really supposed to see them as evil, but when they do evil, it's hard to tease out the acts that they do and not put that on them as a person. It's hard to separate that. For me, it is anyway.
Yeah, so you struggle with the actor versus the action.
Right, right. Because to me, sometimes it's all in one thing. So that was my two cents.
Yeah.
After watching that video, I realized that I think biased compassion is not even compassion. It's just like more self-set gratification so that I can feel good about myself. I did that. And also what Louis said, that it's hard for, like, if I do, maybe it will be very hard to say that may ISIS be well, because we all know that they are doing so much wrong. And if I were to do that, I would think maybe the circumstances brought them, and if I were in those circumstances, maybe I would behave like that. Mm-hmm. But they are still human beings, and they are causing so much suffering on others, but I'm sure they must be suffering internally also.
Yeah, so that's a really... I'm sorry.
So still, like, may they be well also, so that other people are well.
Yeah, so that's a really interesting point, right? If you know that saying, hurt people, right? And so if they weren't hurting, maybe they wouldn't be causing others pain. And so if we could really figure that piece out and say, okay, if they really truly had happiness, then maybe they wouldn't behave in a way that's causing pain for others, you know? But again, it's a big ask, and I'm not saying that everyone needs to be able to do this with everyone, you know, immediately, or maybe not at all, but it's just an idea, something to try. So it's a really excellent point you're raising. Yeah. So another thing that Geshe-la had suggested around this summer, several times he said that we each need to develop a meditation for ourselves that's contemporary on compassion. It sounds like you've got a great one there. I wasn't going to go quite there, Louise, but yay for you. I'm proud of you. I've been thinking a lot about that sort of charge that Geshe-la gave us to try to come up with a contemporary one. And I found a really lovely one written by Venerable Connie Miller. She's an FPMT nun and has been for a very long time. And so I was going to lead us in this guided meditation, but first I wanted to share a quote. This is a quote from Geshe-la that he had said back in June on one of his Sunday teachings. He said, "Progress takes time and requires the practice of patience. My point here is that our goal should be that through this institution, meaning Kadampa Center, more compassionate human beings will be produced. This institution, the goal is not to produce more Buddhists. That's not the goal. At least that's not my goal. The goal must be more compassionate human beings coming from this institution. Then this institution is serving its purpose very well." And so I thought if we actually try to put into practice this guided meditation today, maybe that will help us move towards Geshe-la's goal a little bit. So I don't know how you all feel about meditation. I'm not the greatest meditator, so I try to keep the meditations not too long. So I promise this will be somewhere in the 8 to 10 minute range. If you need to get up or move or whatever, please feel free. I think the last thing we want to do is create a version or have people feel trapped, like they can't do anything. So just do whatever you need to do. But this meditation was actually written for Discovering Buddhism, which is our Monday night class. We have it here. It takes about 2 years to complete the cycle, and next month we'll be starting a new cycle for anyone who hasn't done it and is interested. And I know we have people here in the room who have done it more than one time even. But anyway, that's where this comes from, was from Venerable Connie, and she'd done it for that class. So again, just remember, back straight, feet flat on the floor if you're in a chair. And we're going to start by imagining that you're surrounded by all sentient beings. They're all in the form of human beings. Your father is seated on your right and your mother on your left. Behind you are all your friends and family members, those you're close to. And in front of you are all the sentient beings that you have difficulty with or that you dislike, your enemies. And then surrounding you in all directions, as far as you can see, are all the remaining sentient beings. They're all seated and they're all facing you. Now spend some time thinking of the sufferings of sentient beings. Contemplate the gross level sufferings of sentient beings. These include sufferings of the body, like illness, injury, torture, death, pain, and so on. And sufferings of the mind, like anxiety, depression, grief, anguish. And also sufferings of the mind's delusions, like anger, pride, attachment, jealousy, rage, hatred, obsession, and so on. And then there are the general sufferings of samsara, such as meeting with unpleasant circumstances and people, not encountering desirable people and circumstances, having the things you desire taken away from you, being given things you don't want, and finally, remember the subtle suffering of simply being born in cyclic existence. That is, with a body and mind pervaded by the causes of suffering, so that suffering is indeed inevitable. But as you contemplate these sufferings of others, remember at the same time the kindness of sentient beings. That is, how there's nothing good or desirable that you have that did not come to you from the kindness of sentient beings. Food, clothing, shelter, all the physical things you have only came to you in dependence on others. That you are alive is thanks to the kindness of your mother and your family. Your education and therefore your achievements in this life are due to your education and skills. You only have these because of the kindness of others who taught you, who helped you, who enabled you to go to school, so on. And the kindness of other sentient beings is something that you have received during infinite lifetimes from countless sentient beings. There's not one sentient being who has not been kind to you in many, many lives. So now think, all sentient beings, including myself, are suffering tremendously.
And because of our ignorance, we are forever seeking happiness in our lives. But we are continuously creating the causes of suffering for ourselves and others. Each sentient being has been unspeakably kind to me in all my past lives. So now generate compassion for yourself. How wonderful it would be if I were free of all suffering, for now and forever. May I cause myself to be free of all my suffering. Contemplate this thought strongly in your mind. Place your attention at your heart center. Don't look at your heart center as if from above, as if you are your eyes. Instead, actually become your heart center. You are in your heart. Now imagine that the compassionate thought you have been contemplating manifests in the form of radiant golden light at your heart center. As you contemplate the thought of compassion towards yourself, your compassion in the form of this radiant golden light fills your heart center and your entire body. You are completely enveloped, filled and purified by your compassion. Now generate compassion for all other sentient beings in the same way. How wonderful it would be if all sentient beings were free of all suffering for now and forever. May I cause them to be free of all their suffering. Contemplate this thought strongly in your mind. Again, place your attention at your heart center. You are your heart center. Now, imagine that your compassionate thought that is manifested in the form of radiant golden light at your heart center radiates outward, encompassing all sentient beings. Imagine this gradually. First, the light pervades those who are immediately around you. Then it expands to pervade your entire community. Then your country. Your hemisphere. Your entire planet. The entire universe. All sentient beings in all realms of existence anywhere are completely enveloped by the golden radiating light of your compassion. Contemplate this with a concentrated mind. Now, gradually reabsorb the golden light of your compassion back into your heart. It remains there as a small golden seed, always activated, always alive within you. And make this determination. May all sentient beings be free of every suffering, both gross and subtle. And may I cause them to be free of suffering from today forward. Okay, bring your attention back.
How'd that go? Well, thanks for playing along. So, we have one, well, actually, a final clip and then a final clip. So this is the last clip of teachings from His Holiness we're going to see. This took place a few years ago in an address that His Holiness made to the Hindustan Times. It was a leadership summit there. And this one's on the importance of a compassionate attitude. It's just 2 minutes long. Why don't we go ahead and watch this one?
The compassionate mind is very, very important. Fears, anger, jealousy, these based on self-centered attitude. Develop more sort of sense of, because of the caring of others' well-being. Your heart automatically open. That brings openness, straightforward, transparent, honest. That brings friendship. We are a social animal. For individual survival, entirely depend on the rest of the community. So usually, through my self-centered attitude, develop distrust, suspicion. That brings fear. So more open mind. So no matter what their attitude, but your side, develop a sense of concern of their well-being. Then you can keep inner peace. And sense of concern of others' well-being bring inner strength, self-confidence. So any social animal, I think like bees or ants, those social animals, they have no religion, no constitution, no law, but they work together. Nature creates like that way. So we are also a social animal, but because of our intelligence, sometimes and intelligence with short-term interest, narrow-mindedness, and the negative emotion, is sometimes forgetting our basic nature.
So in this clip, His Holiness says that our basic nature is a social animal. Does that ring true for people? I mean, does that feel like how you see the world? I'm getting some nods, yeah. So, if that's true, do we really need others for our survival? Yeah, okay. So, does that help with maybe the earlier discussion about compassion? If we really think that's true, then even when we don't like what others are doing, if we need others for our survival, then there needs to be some way for us to figure out how we make it work, right? And compassion is one of the ways we can make it work, right? So I think we have time for maybe just a couple of comments on anything today before we conclude. Does anybody have anything either that came up from the meditation, from this clip, or something else that people didn't have a chance to respond to yet? Yeah.
Like he was talking to about fear, and I sometimes fear and worry about future or something that happened in the past that might repeat in future. And I realized that if I learn to be compassionate to myself and others, then in those moments of fear or anxiety, I will be compassionate towards myself and most probably get rid of those feelings.
Yeah, so you're raising a really excellent point we didn't talk a lot about, which is compassion for ourselves, right? I mean, in the meditation, that's the first part we did, but if it doesn't start with compassion for ourselves, it's hard for it to go outward, right? Yeah, so that's really an excellent point. Yeah, Louise.
In that meditation, it was almost like there was a point where I could see myself literally not me, but actually becoming compassion, and not almost like losing your sense of self.
Mm-hmm.
Only a very brief moment. I mean, it was like, so I don't know what to take that. It's a good thing, I guess.
So you're saying you think it's a good thing?
Yeah, I mean, you literally, I when you were talking about the light and seeing yourself as that light, and when you started going out into, like, the world, the universe, then that's less of yourself, and you're more out there, so you're actually becoming, or I am, that compassion and not Louise.
Yeah. So that sounds pretty profound, right? I mean, so there's this... you know, when we're operating in our sort of default mode, for most of us, it's about my to-do list, my world, my car in the traffic, and how everyone's relating to that, right? I mean, there's all these ways that we're always defining over and over again this little narrow definition of me, right? And that's just how we're conditioned. That's what we do. I'm not saying that as a criticism, but the more we can challenge that in the areas where we want to, you know, of course, I'm just saying, if this sounds good, you know, anything I say is always prefaced. This is a grand experiment. You just got to check it out and see. And no have-tos here. But if we start expanding that out, then those problems that we have seem less important, right? Because they're in a grander context. And then as we go out further and further, you know, to our community, to our country, to the planet, to the universe, right? Then it becomes our definition of self can actually change a little bit, even if it's for a brief moment, right? So that seems like a pretty big deal. I rejoice for you. Yeah, thanks for sharing that. Well, so I really appreciate everybody's time today. I want to be mindful of when we need to get out of here. So I think we'll start our conclusion here. So I've shown this a couple of times. I show up most any time I am given the pulpit. but I love this. It makes me laugh. So I hope it does for you too. Go ahead.
Mentally. We are same. Emotionally, we are same. Physically, we are same. No differences. We are simply human beings. You want happy life. I want happy life. We are truly member of one human family. We really need genuine sense of brotherhood, sisterhood.
So to me, that's a great visual and audio representation of what we've been talking about today. So I really want to thank everybody for participating and engaging today, and just rejoice in any positive merit we created by coming together today and trying these things on. And if you're so inclined to pick up the charge this week of thinking about this a couple of times as you move through your week, just... you know, whatever it is that hit you today, whether it's looking at when am I being biased versus unbiased, or whether it's just trying one time to not put yourself first when you're catching yourself doing it, or, you know, whatever might work for you is just a little experiment. And like I said, it's just we're just out there collecting data, and we're figuring out what works and trying to learn from that. So I hope you all go out there and make your life meaningful this week. And I always like to conclude with a quote from His Holiness that probably most of you have heard, but be kind whenever possible. It's always possible. So let's do a few dedication prayers, and we'll call it a day. Oh, and I wanted to let people know, anybody who maybe didn't see the email from Robbie, at 11:30 today we're going to have our annual member meeting. So it's just a time for all the different departments to give a little update on what they're doing and sort of to talk about the state of Kadampa Center. So if anybody didn't know about that and wants to come back, that's going to be happening. So let's turn to the pink sheet on the front page. We'll do the dedication verses from Shantideva. May all beings everywhere, plagued by sufferings of body and mind, obtain an ocean of happiness and joy by virtue of my merits. May no living creature suffer, commit evil, or ever fall ill,
May no one be afraid or belittled with a mind weighed down by depression. May the blind see forms and the deaf hear sounds. May those whose bodies are worn with toil be restored on finding repose. May the naked find clothing, the hungry find food. May the thirsty find water and delicious drinks. May the poor find wealth, those weak with sorrow find joy. May the forlorn find hope, constant happiness and prosperity. May there be timely rains and bountiful harvests. May all medicines be effective and wholesome prayers bear fruit. May all who are sick and ill quickly be freed from their ailments. Whatever diseases there are in the world, may they never occur again. May the frightened cease to be afraid and those bound be freed. May the powerless find power and may people think of benefiting each other. For as long as space remains, for as long as sentient beings remain, until then may I too remain to dispel the miseries of the world. In the land encircled by snow mountains, you are the source of all happiness and good. All-powerful Chenrezig Tenzin Gyatso, please remain until samsara ends. And then we'll jump down to, we'll skip one. The one who mastered his speech at a very young age, the one with great patience who received the name Awatare, the one with great precision who spread the teachings of Lama Tsongkhapa on bliss and void, Lama, ornament of the yellow hat tradition, please remain until samsara ends. You who uphold the Siddur's moral way, who serve as the bountiful bearer of all, sustaining, preserving, and spreading Manjunas' victorious doctrine, who masterfully accomplished magnificent prayers honoring the three jewels, Savior of myself and others, your disciples, please, please live long. And then we always end with seven green Tara mantras, and we do that for Geshe Gelug's long, happy, healthy life, and also, in this case, for his easy, swift return to us to keep teaching in December. Om Tare Tu Tare Tu Re So Ha. 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 Thanks so much, everyone.